And our first case today is case number 52017, Kelly versus State. Ms. Kilpatrick on behalf of appellant, Mr. Torvanian on behalf of respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Alina Kilpatrick, Deputy Public Defender in Elko County. I represent the appellant, Mr. Winston Kelly. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
The issue of voluntariness is very fact specific, but fortunately, many of the facts in this case are not in dispute. It's the error interpretation that brought about this appeal. On April 10th, 2007, Deputy Sean Sterling of Elmore County, Idaho, found Mr. Kelly passed out in a truck on the side of the road. Actually, it was more in the middle of the road. He approached Mr. Kelly, found out that he was passed out with a cigarette lighter in his mouth. He arrested him for DUI and possession of a stolen vehicle here, but was grand theft by possession in Idaho. The next day, on April 11th, Captain Barkley of Elmore County meets with Detective McKinney of Elko County, and they interview Mr. Kelly in the Elmore County Jail. Now, what's interesting is that on the side of the road, when Mr. Kelly was arrested for grand theft by possession and for DUI, he unequivocally made a request for an attorney. He said, "I want a lawyer." Not a fact in dispute at all. Well, he was in custody because he was at the Elmore County Jail on the DUI and on the possession of a stolen vehicle. And Captain Barkley and Detective McKinney start interviewing him. If one can see from the DVD of this interview that the interview starts with Captain Barkley handing Winston Kelly a piece of paper and basically saying something to the effect of, "Mr. Kelly, this is, you know, a piece of paper. It's to protect you. It's to protect me." And basically what it says is, you know, "We're going to ask you a few questions, but, you know, if you have a specific question that you don't want to answer, that's fine, and we'll move along to the next one." That was Miranda. And Mr. Kelly, as can be seen from the tape, holds this piece of paper, which is the waiver of rights form, for maybe all of 20 seconds before he gives it back to Captain Barkley. Now, Captain Barkley asks him, "Do you understand what's on this paper?" Mr. Kelly says, "Yes. Do you want to talk?" And then the interview proceeds. Well, about 45 minutes into the interview, another request for counsel is made. And 45 minutes into the interview, Mr. Kelly says words to the effect of, "I'd like to wait and just talk to a lawyer. I'm not going to talk to," and then the recording's kind of bad. You can't understand what he says right after that. "Stories are coming out all wrong." That's about 45 minutes into the interview. Run right over. They just keep on going. Captain Barkley at the suppression hearing said that he didn't find that to be a very a statement that requested counsel. He thought that was rather equivocal. And Detective McKinney of Elko said that he thought that, but he didn't even hear it, that he was too busy thinking of his next question that he didn't even hear the words. So throughout this entire interview, the only person to say the word lawyer or attorney was Mr. Kelly. Then towards the end of the interview, things get a little bit more desperate. And we hear a couple things that are quite troubling. First, to be addressed, would be Captain Barkley saying towards the end, "Mr. Kelly, God forgives everybody for everything. It doesn't matter," or words to that effect. And then about a minute later comes the hellfire and damnation. "Tell me right now, if we don't find him, you have to answer to God for every day of your life," or words to that effect. Sometimes God's not going to be as forgetful if we don't get this, if we don't find this guy.
Well, isn't the issue of the, from back east, of the Christian burial, where the court said that's okay to talk about things like that, where a body was missing and a a guy was in the police car, and they said, well, we'd at least like to give her parents, let the deceased have a Christian burial type thing. I mean, what's wrong with talking about Christian ethics or whatever they were talking about?
There's a difference between talking about Christian ethics and talking about a Christian burial and using it as a threat, saying what Captain Barclay said, which is, tell me right now, if we don't find him, you're going to have to answer to God for every day of the rest of your life. There's a huge difference.
Seems kind of mild to me compared to what some police officers do.
Well, you have to look at this in the totality of the circumstances, of course. All the things that went wrong in this interview are just ingredients in this big old stew of a bad interview.
So that may be true, and I think that there's a laundry list of items that are set forth in the briefs of issues that we should be looking at, and I assume that you're about to get to. But what about all the other evidence that we have in this case that implicates your client? The blood, the weapon. You just want us to look first at that which should have been suppressed, and therefore none of the rest comes in. Is that basically your position?
No, my position, Your Honor, is that the blood of court that was found in the truck would come in. The knife that was found in the truck would have come in. It's just the body.
Okay.
And everything that was found on the body, the circumstances is how the body was found, and the circumstances is to, of course, the autopsy would, you know, of course, have come from the body. So the truck, everything else, it would not be suppressible.
You don't think that's enough to convict your client anyhow?
Well, that's for a jury to decide. But there is nothing more harmful in a murder case than a dead body. So this is definitely harmful error. But this is not one of those cases where a suppression issue would be dispositive. If the body does not come in, there's still enough evidence for a new trial.
Ms. Kilpatrick, though, following up on what Justice Sade is, that, you know, putting that issue, the confession, aside, we have Mr. Kelly telling his cousin that he planned to kill Mr. Braun. We have the knife. He's sleeping in Mr. Braun's pickup truck. I mean, it seems to me there's a good argument that, excluding the confession, that the jury could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of the murder. What's your position on that?
Yes, they could, but we won't know unless we put it in front of them without the dead body, because there are other facts at issue here. With regard to the knife, Mr. Kelly's DNA was not found on that knife. Only Mr. Braun's DNA was found on that handle. And with regard to Mr. Braun had end-stage cancer. He was dying. He was seen gambling away all of his money, coming to say goodbye to his children, had sold his house, had all of his worldly belongings packed in the back of a car, and was seen. There was evidence to show that he was just gambling and drinking and smoking all night, like he was sort of given up, basically.
So he died by natural causes, or what?
Well, without the body, we could have used a different defense.
I see.
For sure.
Okay.
A very viable defense, given Mr. Braun's state at the time of his death. Now, with regard to the laundry list of factors that made this confession bad, we've got Mr. Kelly's low level of intelligence, which was described in the brief. His overall IQ is 75. Dr. Larson, an expert in clinical psychology, testified that he didn't think that Winston Kelly could have understood what was going on, didn't think that Mr. Kelly could understand the Miranda form that was given to him. With regard to the lack of advisement of his constitutional rights, not only was the Miranda not given, it was contradicted. Mr. Kelly was given a piece of paper, and then Captain Barclay completely mischaracterized everything that it said. Captain Barclay didn't say, you don't have to talk to us if you don't want to. Captain Barclay said, yeah, if you have a question that we don't like, we're just going to move on to the next one, indicating basically this interview is going to continue and continue and continue and continue, until infinity. And the reason why that is so important is because when Miranda is not given, it gives an irrebuttable presumption of coercion. Not only was it not given, it was completely mischaracterized. Now, the ignored request for counsel, both on the side of the road and during the interview, are very important. Now, even if the court decides that a break should happen at the second request for counsel, the body and all the information that came from it happened after that second request for counsel. They weren't getting anywhere beforehand. Now, Barclay didn't acknowledge it at all, and because Mr. Kelly invoked his right to counsel and they continued to ask him questions, that creates a presumption of involuntariness. And that is a presumption that the state is going to have a very difficult time overcoming. And then with regard to promises and threats, a seminal case regarding involuntariness in Elko, or excuse me, in all of Nevada, it came out of Elko, was Passama. And in Passama, the court talked about a carrot and stick approach, where it was actually the sheriff, Sheriff Miller, was interviewing Mr. Passama and threatened Mr. Passama with talking to the DA if he didn't respond to his questions. And we have a similar approach here because Captain Barclay said to Mr. Kelly that what's going to hurt is if we have to tell the judge or the paperwork that we have to keep going over this again and again, or words to that effect. So Captain Barclay leaves the whole issue of I'm going to tell the DA, you know, he crosses that line and just keeps on going by saying, well, if we have to tell the judge, that's going to hurt. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Trevino, on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm Mark Torvinen from the DA's office in Elko County, Nevada. The first thing I'd like to do is supplement the facts a little bit. And lest there be any confusion about this, district court suppressed his confession, and there was not one word uttered during the case in chief of the government with respect to it. Not one word. The other thing I want to address relative to the facts is this. I think it's important that the court understand, because the appellant's trying to convey some sort of environment that these law enforcement officers set out to violate this person's constitutional rights, and that's not what happened. One, the government doesn't think they were violated, but what happened was the government all but conceded the Edwards Kaczmarek consequence of his original invocation of the rights to counsel on the highway out there on the morning of the 10th of April 2007, all but conceded that. Moreover, Captain Barclay was aware of the fact that he had invoked. And so what they did is they went and saw a prosecutor in Elmore County, Idaho, and they were told that there was no problem with them going and talking to him as long as they didn't talk about the DUI. I'd also like to supplement the facts with respect to the admonishment of the rights. If you look at that DVD, what Captain Barclay said was, can I read this to you, or would you like to read it yourself? And Mr. Kelly reached his arm out, and Captain Barclay handed it to him.
But, counsel, don't we have some significant educational deficit as well as language barrier that may have been at issue?
I think if you listen to that tape, he seemed to speak English fine. But I don't see that there was a language problem.
Is it not true and accurate that Paiute was his first language?
That was the evidence before the court.
And certainly no disagreement about the perhaps educational deficit.
Pardon?
No disagreement with respect to educational deficit?
No. But the interestingly enough, their own expert at the suppression hearing indicated that it was his belief that he very well could have read that Miranda form in the 20 seconds he had it. He just didn't believe he understood it. He clearly, unequivocally indicated that he had the capability to read it and may have. He just didn't believe that he understood it. Which brings me to an issue I raised in my brief, and that is, how are law enforcement officers out in the field when they confront somebody who is not obviously impaired in any way, intellectually or otherwise? He clearly verbalizes to them that he understands his rights. Are they suggesting somehow that the government bring a psychologist to their interviews? I don't know how this can be applicable in practical law enforcement.
But isn't the issue here really one of Wong's son versus Chapman versus California? In other words, you guys didn't put in the confession. Am I correct?
Yeah.
All right. So the only thing that came in was the body was found, yes, on the basis of his statements.
Correct.
So the defense would argue that this is a Wong's son, fruit of the poisonous tree. You would argue that it's Chapman versus California, that aside from even the body coming in, that there was plenty of evidence that a rational jury would have found this defendant guilty of murder no matter what. So it's really a Wong's son versus a Chapman.
Well, I don't see it, Your Honor, particularly as Wong's son, because the issue is if the confession was involuntary, then the government cannot use involuntary in the due process sense. Then the government cannot use the evidence derived as a result or acquired as a result of it. If it is not involuntary, even if it's a violation of Miranda, this is Patain, even if there's a violation of Miranda, and Conley, I think, is cited in the briefs as well, even if there's a violation of Miranda, as long as it is not voluntary, that is coerced, his will was not overborne, then the physical evidence derived from an interview is not suppressible.
And what case are you basing that on?
Patain versus the United States. The government takes a position that there was plenty of evidence to convict him absent the body.
So it wouldn't be a Chapman issue under Boutet.
I don't see it as I think, you know, in terms of harmless error, I suppose, if the court concluded that if we never had the body, the result would have been the same, I think what you're asking me is was there sufficient evidence to justify the verdict? And I've certainly taken that position. But I don't think it's a Wong-Song issue, Your Honor. It's an issue with respect to the derivative evidence from the interview. And the government takes a position that it was voluntary, if you look at the totality of the circumstances. Now, I'd also like to address the issue of counsel's characterization of the invocation of the right to counsel and or silence. And if you look at the tape, I suppose it's well that we all... Oh, before I forget it, Your Honors, I feel it, the state feels it very, very important. Throughout the brief, the appellant repeatedly suggests that the district court's determinations in this regard is not entitled to any deference, and that your result is going to be entirely de novo. And the state disagrees with the standard that the appellant is asserting to this court. Specifically, in 2005, this court decided a case entitled Roski versus State, wherein it overruled a long line of cases where the standard of review relative to voluntariness was whether or not there was substantial evidence in the record to support the court's determinations. And if that existed, then there wasn't going to be a disturbance of that finding. In Roski, this court said the proper inquiry requires a two-step analysis. The district court's purely historical factual findings pertaining to the scene and action setting circumstances surrounding interrogation is entitled to deference and will be reviewed for clear error. The district court's ultimate determination of whether or not a person was in custody or whether a statement was voluntary will be reviewed de novo. So the district court's findings of fact is entitled to some deference. In any event, I want to get back to the asserted invocations of silence and the right to counsel. What the words actually spoken were, bear with me. The Originally, it was, I'm not going to say nothing, Kay, because I don't even know what's going on. In which case, whereupon Detective McKinney informed him that they wanted to know about this truck. And I'm suggesting to the court that that was not an invocation of the right to silence. The second one, counsel left out a word that the appellant used during the course of his declaration. I like to just wait and talk to a lawyer or something. I'm not going to talk. Then there's an inaudible. Can't understand what he says, and stories are coming out wrong. This court in Dewey, another case that arose in Elko County, indicated that police officers have no obligation to stop questioning a suspect under Miranda unless the suspect exercises the right to remain silent or makes an unambiguous and unequivocal request for an attorney. So the state, I want the court to understand, the state takes issue factually with whether or not those declarations constituted invocations of the right to silence and or the right to an attorney.
Mr. Trevino, let me ask you this, if we can jump ahead. I think we understand your position on the voluntariness issue. Now, let's assume we disagree with you and we conclude it wasn't voluntary.
Okay.
Your opposing counsel has said that there is not sufficient evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to affirm the conviction, and that the case would have to, I think her arguments would have to be reversed, and you take out the body evidence and then present the other evidence, and the jury would determine that. Do you think there was sufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, excluding the body evidence that to convict Mr. Keller?
Your Honor, what the state presented was that Mr. Brown picked Mr. Kelly up at the smoke shop in Battle Mountain, Nevada. Several minutes later, they encountered Mr. Kelly's brother, where he disclosed to him that he intended to kill the man who had the truck.
It was a brother, not a cousin.
Cousin, you're right.
Okay.
Cousin, you're right. And there's a road from Golconda to Taylor Canyon. That afternoon, we have a bartender that, although he couldn't identify Mr. Kelly, could identify the truck. It was in Taylor Canyon. If you go north from there, it goes to the Idaho border. And on that road, 6 to 8 miles into Elko County, was Mr. Brown's hat, his blood, broken window from his pickup truck, and at 2 o'clock the next morning, after Mr. Kelly did tell his brother that he got in a fight with the fellow up in Owyhee. Mr. Kelly is sitting in the middle of the road, and blood is running out from underneath the tailgate. Running out, that's how the deputy described it, from underneath the tailgate. I take the position that he would have been convicted, Your Honor. And I think I'm going to end my presentation on that basis.
Thank you very much. And let me see if Justice Sater or Justice Gibbons have any more questions of the district attorney.
The only other issue is the jurisdiction one, whether it occurred. And the recent Fields cases, does that have any impact on that argument on the jurisdiction?
I don't. To the state, it was pretty clear. They started out at Golconda. That road goes to Taylor Canyon, which is in Elko County. 6 miles into Elko County is where his hat, his blood on the road, his pen, all of that was found in the road in Elko County.
Your position then, it's a jury question. The jury could conclude.
Well, counsel took issue with that. There was no objection to the instruction. I cited an old case, one Nevada, can you imagine? Talking about the government's obligation to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. And the judge made it clear that he was going to submit it to the jury. So I just can't see if it was a legal question. Factually, I think we made it. There's no question about that. The judge's determination was correct. They objected on the basis that it was submitted to the jury at all, and yet they got an opportunity to argue it, so there's certainly no harm. As I said, if the jury was not instructed on that issue, it would have made a difference one way or another.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick.
I'd like to highlight a few things that the state brought up. First off, with regard to Mr. Kelly speaking with his cousin, Delmar Kelly, the record indicates that Delmar Kelly originally thought that was a joke. We also presented evidence from a language expert who taught or teaches at Great Basin College, Mr. Kavanaugh. Mr. Kavanaugh explained that what Indians or Native Americans view as humor might be funny to them, but might be crude to us. With regard,
doesn't that become probative if it turns out he's dead?
Of course,
after that statement was made.
Of course, it does become probative, but we have to put all of this into context, and there's no way that we can say beyond a reasonable doubt that without a body, given the circumstances of Mr. Braun, that a jury would have come to the same conclusion.
Well, we have a case, Berkey West versus State. It's about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a Clark County case where the daughter was convicted of killing her mother by killing her, putting her in a storage unit for years, you know, in some sort of vat, and so the body just completely deteriorated, so they couldn't prove the cause of death. And we concluded in that opinion that it can be proven, even without a body, you can prove murder through circumstantial evidence. And so based upon that, counsel's saying there's sufficient evidence, and he laid out why for the jury to come to that conclusion. So that's really the key issue in the case as far as I'm concerned. I'm interested in what you think about that.
With regard to the cause of death, the coroner said it was multiple stab wounds. And there was a knife found in there. Now, given the nature of where the wounds were, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to say that it was a suicide. It would not be unreasonable for a defense attorney to argue that that's how this happened, given Mr. Braun's state at the time of his death. Obviously, with the body, that would have been very hard to argue, given where the stab wounds were located. And given the testimony of the coroner, we could have used a different defense. And the reason why this case is unlike most others is because of the state of the victim at the time of his death, the fact that he was dying. And yes, there was a lot of blood found in the truck, and yes, there was a knife found in the truck, but given the totality of the circumstances surrounding Mr. Braun, there's no way that we can say beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury would have come to the same conclusion. And we have to look at this as a whole. And with regard to involuntariness, we have to look at the totality of the circumstances. It takes chemistry to create coercion, and you add all of them together, you throw them into the soil that creates a poisonous tree. And we have to cut the fruit off of that. And without that fruit, we cannot be sure, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the jury would have come to the same conclusion.
Thank you. Thank you to both attorneys and on your argument and your briefs. And I would like to announce to both of you that you know that this panel, this we call the Northern panel, we'd rather be called the Nevada panel, since we do overflow from the South plus the rurals plus Washoe, that we went to Winnemucca and Elko in May of last year. We had such a wonderful time that, like the Terminator, we will be back. And in September, we'll be back in West Wendover, and hope to see maybe both of you and or your district attorney or your public defender. And if we happen to do criminal cases, we may do civil cases. But we're very excited about being a panel that travels. So thank you very much. In this case, we'll stand submitted.